Good evening. This is State Representative Todd Stevens. Thank you for joining me this evening. Tonight, I'm holding this telephone town hall meeting to give me the opportunity to speak to large numbers of you and, frankly, to hear from large numbers of you as well about all the issues surrounding this novel coronavirus that we are facing here in Pennsylvania and across the country and, frankly, across the globe. The way this works, if you have a question for me at any point during this call, you simply press star and the number 3. Star and the number 3 will get you into the queue to ask a question. Otherwise, this kind of works like talk radio. You can just sit back and listen to other people's questions. We have a terrific special guest on tonight that I'll get to in just a moment. But I want to give you a brief update here. If you've been following my social media, the local news, and daily briefings from the Wolf administration, you know that the novel coronavirus, COVID-19, continues to spread in Pennsylvania. As of last night at midnight, we have more than 4,000 positive cases in 59 of our 67 counties, and sadly, 48 deaths. As state and federal health officials continue to remind us, it is important to stay calm and stay home, if at all possible. And with that, I want to get to our guest. Unfortunately, Montgomery County has been and continues to be at the epicenter of this crisis. That's why I asked Dr. Valerie Arcush, our chair of the Montgomery County Board of Commissioners, to join me tonight to give us an update and take your questions. I did just get her alert this afternoon, admonishing me and everybody else to make sure we are staying home unless we absolutely must go out. Commissioner Kirsch has been leading the effort here in our county and has frankly done a terrific job. Commissioner Kirsch, thanks so much for taking the time to join us tonight. And could you please just give us an update of where things stand in Montgomery County here?
Sure, I'd be happy to. And Representative Stevens, thank you so much for inviting me to talk with everyone this evening. So as probably most people know at this point, Montgomery County was the first county in the Commonwealth to be notified that we had two individuals that had tested positive for this new coronavirus. That was back on March 7th. So we are now just beginning our fourth week dealing with this situation. And honestly, I can hardly remember what life was like before this all started. So since then, it's been a very rapidly evolving situation, and every day brings new challenges. Here in the county, we have, as of noon today, 506 individuals who have tested positive for the coronavirus. And very sadly, 6 Montgomery County residents have lost their lives to this disease. These individuals are in almost every one of our 62 municipalities at this point. We are at 51 municipalities that have someone living in them, at least one person that has a case. And we have just been working to help the public be educated, to get information out to the public that's accurate and trustworthy, and to do our best to communicate with all of our constituents across the county on what they should be doing and how to take care of themselves. I just want to mention this at the top of this, and then I'll do it again. If you aren't familiar with the county's data hub for COVID-19, you should really check it out. It's MontcoPA, so www.montcopa.org/COVID-19. I learned today that we're getting about 45 to 50,000 page hits a day, and that the page has been viewed by people from 99 different countries. So it seems to be a very valued resource for people, and I would urge you to check it out. Many of the questions and resources that we have available in the county are there and easy to access. So with that, I'll turn it back to you, Representative Stevens, and we can get into more of the details in the questions.
Thanks so much. I want to just give a plug. That dashboard is really impressive. One of the things I try to do on social media is put out as much data and statistics from the state as possible. But you guys have that all easily accessible for the public, and it's just really done a terrific job for those that want to get real granular with the data and, you know, look at the age and the gender and the breakdown of the demographics of people who are affected by this. So my hat's off to you for that. I think it's a terrific opportunity for people to gain information.
Well, thank you.
No problem. So again, press star on the number 3 and you'll be put into the queue for questions. I just want to run through a little bit of what we did in Harrisburg over the last week, because we've been pretty busy trying to address some of these issues. So You know, the Pennsylvania House of Representatives convened 2 weeks ago simply to change our rules. We were not allowed to vote remotely, frankly, since the House was created in 1682. But we changed that rule 2 weeks ago, anticipating all that we've endured, you know, with this crisis and the social distancing that we're all trying to maintain. So as a result, we were able to vote last week on some very important legislation that we put on the governor's desk, and he promptly signed. One of the most important votes we took last week was to approve $50 million in state funding to purchase medical equipment and supplies for hospitals, nursing homes, and emergency workers. That's one of the big issues that we're all seeing every day on the news, and I've heard Commissioner Arkush discuss this as well, the PPE that our healthcare workers and EMS workers need so desperately. Last week, the governor also signed into law, and I've received a lot of questions about Senate Bill 751, which ensures our school districts are making a good faith effort to offer continuing education during the school closure, which just today was extended to until further notice. So Senate Bill 751 makes sure that schools are continuing to do distance learning. It eliminates the 180-day instruction requirement in all public and non-public schools. Allowed the Department of Education to cancel PSSA testing and Keystone exams for the 1920 school year, and the also the Pennsylvania Alternative System of Assessment. Remember, press star and the number 3 if you want to get into the queue for a question. As you no doubt know, businesses deemed to be non-life-sustaining by the Wolf administration have been ordered to remain closed until further notice. To help businesses impacted by the spread of coronavirus, there are two loan programs available that may be of interest to you. The state's COVID-19 Working Capital Access Program provides loans of up to $100,000 for working capital with a 0% interest rate. Funds are limited and will be awarded on a first-come, first-served basis. To apply, you need to work through a local certified economic development organization, and that's housed at the county. And so if there are any questions about that, I'm glad we have Dr. Arkush here who can help us in terms of that information as well. They've been really helpful over the weekend getting a lot of applications filed with the state. I know my office has worked tremendously with the county organization to get that done. The U.S. Small Business Administration also has loans up to $2 million in assistance and can provide vital economic support to other small businesses to help overcome the temporary loss of revenue they're experiencing. The Small Business Loan Center's Customer Service Center can be reached at 800-659-2955. Last week, we also voted to ensure workers have access to unemployment compensation. House Bill 68 enacted several emergency measures. Notably, the bill waives the waiting week requirement for and job search and registration requirements for all unemployment comp claimants for the duration of the disaster emergency. It also provides relief for employers for the charges that they would typically pay for folks that are unemployed. Lastly, the bill authorizes the department to enact any emergency regulations necessary to comply with requirements for any federal assistance for administrative costs or extended benefits. So we put that flexibility in place for the governor to utilize to avail ourselves of federal funds. And I know one that Commissioner Arkush was involved with and was advocating for. We also voted to delay the primary election until Tuesday, June 2nd. We hope that that's long enough. We were very concerned about poll workers, particularly our seniors, being exposed to voters all day long in the event that this crisis had not abated by then. So we pushed the primary out to June 2nd. Notably, everyone in Pennsylvania can vote by mail, and I know a lot of us are advocating that voters do just that. It's so simple and easy and convenient. It's really the best way to go about voting with all that's going on right now. And then in addition to moving the date of the election, that bill also gave the county commissioners the ability and flexibility, really, to consolidate or move polling places. Unfortunately, we've heard about many polling places that are declining to participate in the election with all that's going on, understandably so. And this gives the county commissioners the ability to ensure that our election can still move forward without a hitch. Star and the number 3 will get you into that, ask a question. Just a couple other deadlines I want to make sure you know have been extended. We get questions about these all the time, so I want to put them out there for everybody. State and federal income tax filing deadlines have been extended to July 15th. The deadline for seniors and people with disabilities to apply for the property tax rent rebate program has been extended to December 31st. The Real ID deadline has been extended until October 1st of 2021. The Department of Aging has announced the extension for pharmaceuticals. They'll now offer refill extensions for older adults. So if you're on the PACE program, check with my office about the additional benefits that are available there. And one last thing, I want to let everybody know, even though we are working remotely, my office is still up and running. We are closed to walk-in service, but we are all on the phone and online all day long, responding to emails and addressing your constituent concerns. And I know that over the last 2 weeks, my staff has been really, really stepping up and working tremendously to support all the folks in this district. So, I appreciate your patience, and we're all working hard to make sure that you're getting the information you need. So with that, let's get going to the calls. So, Frank, I think you had a question about the Willow Grove Naval Air Station. Are you there, Frank?
Yeah.
What's your question there, Frank? How you doing?
I'm doing fine. My question is, we've got Willow Grove Naval Air Station sitting over there with big, empty buildings, including the Navy Inn, a base hospital, and what used to be barracks. Why aren't they being used? I understand the feds still own it, but why haven't we taken steps to get it open so we can use it? You can land helicopters there if you have to.
Yeah, so
if you can use the Javits Center and Leocora Center, why can't we get that open?
Yeah, it's a great question, Frank. And I know that that was an asset that was considered. I was not a part of that decision-making process. Commissioner Arcos, I don't know if you have any additional information you want to share relative to how the decisions were made in terms of what assets to utilize in that regard.
Yeah, so that's a great question. The county maintains a list of locations that can be used in a number of different emergencies. And right now, happily, our hospitals are doing okay. All of our hospitals have canceled all of their elective procedures for the most part. And interestingly, people are staying home as they have been instructed to do so. So even the emergency room volume has gone down. So we are hopeful that if people continue to stay home, that we will be able to handle the increase in cases that we are expecting over the next 2 weeks. There's been some modeling of the data to suggest that we should hit our peak here in this area in 2 weeks or so, two and a half weeks. But we are absolutely planning for what's called surge capacity. So the Naval Air Base is complicated for a couple of reasons. One, it's entirely owned by the federal government. And two, there are questions about the water situation there and things like that. So the first thing that we've done at the county is open up a testing site, a community-based testing site that's on the campus of Temple Ambler in Upper Dublin. That opened on March the 20th, and as of this morning, we had tested 2,364 individuals at that location. So that's been extremely helpful. And then we are working on an opportunity in Delaware County at the old Glenn Mills School, where a federal group has come in and set up a 100-bed hospital. And that is pretty much up and just needs to get some staff in place, and that will be available for surge capacity. And then we are working on a second location in the county where we could set up a temporary hospital type of situation. And remember that all these things, they need to have access to oxygen and water and other things. And so sometimes it's actually easier to set up near a structure that's currently functioning, whereas the situation out at the airbase is things are pretty shut down. So far, so good. But we absolutely know it's there. And certainly if we needed it, we could pursue a way to get there.
That's great. Thank you. Thank you very much. Let's move on to Catherine West. Catherine, I think you had a question about clarifying medical issues. Catherine, are you there?
Oh, yes. Yes. I wanted to know, I hear things from the president and I see things on the internet that say things, for example, if you're on Motrin, you should not take it because it'll give you difficulties with respirators if you have COVID-19. And I wondered if there's some place online by the county or whatever that you can go and get those kinds of questions answered, see whether they're true or false.
Sure, and that's a great question. I know a lot of folks have questions like that. And we are so fortunate in Montgomery County, and I hate to impose upon her again, but on top of being our county commissioner and the chair of the Board of Commissioners, Valerie Cush is also a physician. So I'll kick that one over to your role as a doctor, Valerie O'Cush.
And, look thank for some you. Guidance. But I don't want to give medical advice over the phone, but I will tell you this, that remember that this virus is brand new to the world. And so everything that we know about this virus goes back to just this past January. So people are making observations about, which is completely appropriate, about groups of patients and how they have done with various treatments. The issue with ibuprofen, which is the generic name of Motrin, is that there was a study that observed that a number of patients who were taking that particular medication did not seem to do as well as people who were not. But observational studies are very weak in their rigor and their scientific rigor, and it's not 100% clear yet whether or not that's true. The best place for that type of information is the Center for Disease Control's website, cdc.gov, and they have done a pretty good job of getting that type of information up. They also have information about hydroxychloroquine, which is this malaria drug that you've heard people talk about. And again, none of these things are proven yet, but research is actually being done. With the ibuprofen, you know, that's sort of an easy thing. If you can take Tylenol, or its generic name is acetaminophen, if you're able to take that medication, you don't have any contraindications, and you feel like you've got a little temperature or sore throat, you could certainly take that rather than the ibuprofen. But none of these recommendations for medications have been proven as of right now.
All right. Well, that's great information. Thank you. We're going to shift gears here off of the health front. We're going to talk to Bobby, who's got a question about auto inspections. Go ahead, Bobby. What's your question?
Hi. My question is, has the state considered, or are they considering, suspending the automobile inspection program for the duration of this? Because I know people are very concerned about getting their cars in so we don't get cited when we are allowed back on the roads.
Sure, sure. And that's actually a great point. The Department of Transportation did, in fact, extend the deadline for both safety inspections and emission inspections. So anyone whose inspections expire between March and April, the expiration is now extended through May 31st. And they'll continue to take action on that. You know, if this goes longer than you know, we hope, they'll continue to slide that back. But for the time being, there's no inspections that are going to expire until May 31st. And the same is true, by the way, of driver's license, photo ID cards, and learner's permits. They are also all extended to May 31st of 2020 so far. Okay?
Thank you. I appreciate that very much.
No problem at all. All right. Let's move to Karen, who has a question about the schools.
Yes, I think that's been partially answered, Todd. Thank you for taking the call. I had wondered whether students would have to make the time up across the state, whether that would be a decision solely by each individual school district, or that no time has to be made up, even if a district wants to do that. They would be mandated not to make their students continue the year.
So what we did in the legislation last week was provide a great deal of flexibility for our schools. We recognize that we are in uncharted waters here. And so we wanted to give our local educators the flexibility they need to deliver the education in their district to their students. You can imagine Pennsylvania is such a diverse place. Believe it or not, many parts of the Commonwealth do not have access to broadband internet service. So
sure.
Even online learning is not an option for them. So we couldn't legislate a one-size-fits-all out-of-the-box approach. What we did was we really took the reins off and said, okay, have at it, local school boards, you know, and superintendents, come up with the best approach for your community. And so we did waive that 180-day requirement, and the school districts are going to be able to to do as much learning as possible. Now, this is one thing we did put in the bill. They are still required to educate our students.
Right.
You know, it's not like they can just, you know, forego that responsibility altogether. But we're giving them the flexibility to do it in whatever way works best for them. So they're not going to be locked into that 180 days, but they do still need to keep educating our kids. All right?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Anytime. Thank you. All right. Let's move on to Lou. Lou has a question about the way this virus spreads. Go ahead, Lou.
Yeah. So I had two, but I'll start with one, and if we can do it, great.
Okay.
So what? It's very confusing to me because the fact that it's so fast, it's unbelievable how quickly it spreads. It you know, you hear, well, if you're near someone who coughs or sneezes or if you touch a surface, can you just get this from just being near someone who's just normally breathing and happens to have the virus? It's not clear to me that that's possible or not, whether that's possible or not.
I'll again bring in Dr. Arkush. I know that all the medical and health experts that I've heard from talk about just how unbelievably easily this virus spreads. Dr. Arkush, you have some comments there?
Yeah, it is extremely contagious. And again, just with that information that this is still a new virus and we're all still learning, here is what we do believe about it. We believe that it spread by a respiratory droplet. So if you cough and cough into your hand and then shake somebody's hand, or you sneeze into your hand and shake somebody's hand, you can absolutely spread it that way. That's why we're making such a big deal about washing your hands constantly. If you are near somebody who coughs and they just don't cover their mouth, for instance, or they sneeze and they don't cover their sneeze, and you're close enough to them, then you can catch it that way as well. That's where this recommendation for keeping 6 feet apart, if you are out taking a walk with somebody, for instance, that is not one of your household contacts, that you really have to maintain social distance, or if you're in line at the grocery store, you should really stay 6 feet apart. There is evidence that the virus can live on surfaces, on metal and plastic in particular, for maybe as long as 24 hours, possibly even longer. So that's, again, where the recommendations for trying to keep your hands as clean as possible and trying not to touch your face come from. The other thing about this virus is that I've seen that people can be contagious for 2 days, about 2 days, before they are obviously having symptoms. And so it could be that someone has just a minor cough or a little bit of aches and pains, but doesn't really think that they're sick, but they do seem to be contagious. And so that's part of why this is spreading so quickly, is that people could be out and about and think that they're fine, but actually be spreading the disease. There's also a very large number of people who get the disease that are very, very mild in the symptoms that they have and perhaps don't even really know that they're sick. So that's just like a perfect storm for this disease to spread, and that is many of the reasons why we believe it's so contagious.
Yeah, that's what we keep hearing, that's for sure. Let's move to, this is another one that I think might be best for you, Commissioner. So this is John. John, you had a question about the statistics of patients who have made a full recovery. It's one of the things that I keep hearing about as well. Why don't you go ahead and ask your questions in that regard?
Yeah, and yeah, I did want to know if we had any stats yet on how many people that were tested positive have already made a full recovery and if they are now immune to it. And then is there any truth to what I've heard that those people could then donate blood to people who are still ill because they have the antibodies in their blood to help cure these people?
Yeah, great questions. So unfortunately, we don't have any official data on people's recovery. So the only official data that we have is the number of people that have tested positive. And then, of course, sadly, the number of people that have died with coronavirus. The state health department nor our county health department have a good mechanism for tracking people's recovery. That's often kind of a hard endpoint. You know, when you think about just when you've had a cold, how do you know when your cold is really over? but we do at least know, thankfully, that very few people are passing away from the disease, but we don't have good numbers on recovery. It is believed that if you recover from the disease, and again, the vast majority of people will recover, that you should have some immunity for some period of time. This virus is in the same family of viruses that cause the common cold, although obviously it is much more serious than the common cold. And that typically, when you get a cold, you have some immunity to that same virus for maybe 7-8 months, something along that line. So the hope is that it would be at least that long with this virus. And you've probably read in the paper this idea, which is actually a very old idea. It was back in the early 1900s when the flu was going around, when measles were going around, very contagious, and there was no other treatments for those things. Doctors figured out that you could take the serum from the blood of someone who had recovered and give that serum to somebody else. And the serum is the part of your blood. It's not the part that has the red blood cells. It's the part that has the antibodies in it. And that you can give those antibodies and to someone else and potentially protect them. So I am aware that there is at least one or two studies going on right now to see if that would be beneficial in this disease. Because until we have a vaccine, and this is one of the most challenging and frustrating things about COVID-19, there is no treatment for this disease right now. There's no drugs that have been proven to actually improve the outcomes in this. There are some studies being done with this malaria drug that I mentioned earlier and another antiviral drug, but nothing's been proven yet. So in the meantime, what doctors are doing is called supportive care. So treating somebody's fever, if they're really having trouble breathing, perhaps putting the person on a ventilator to help get oxygen into their lungs. But none of those things are the same as giving a drug to treat the virus. We just don't have that yet. The hope is within a year or so, we'll have a vaccine. But in the meantime, people are investigating some of these other things that could help someone who's really sick or potentially help them.
That's great information. Thank you for that. The next question we have is about the Monco emergency broadcast that went out. I referenced that in the opening here. Ken, you had a question for Commissioner Arkosh?
Yes. I received that alert by phone and text earlier. And it seemed to emphasize the staying at home to the point where nothing was mentioned about getting out for exercise, whether it be walking or cycling or whatever you might be doing. And I was just wondering if the attitude towards that has changed any. And a second part, if you do have a second, with regard to antibodies, since we're talking about it, are there any plans, or do we know how far down the road, to where somebody could actually have an antibody assay run to determine whether or not you've had the disease, you may have been asymptomatic or you just made it through it, but you're no longer either contagious and you can actually function in the society without any concerns?
Yep. Okay, so I'll go to the first one first. So those public service announcements, when we send them out, they have to be really short or people don't, they just stop listening. So we did send out a call to about 200,000 people today. We have the ability at the county to do what's called a reverse 911 call. And so we can call any landline in the county and then anybody's cell phone who's registered through Ready Montco when we feel that there's critical public information that needs to be conveyed to the public. And the reason that we did that this afternoon is that while a lot of people, many, many people in Montgomery County are heeding the recommendations to stay home, there's an awful lot of people who aren't. And particularly like kids getting together to play basketball, like big groups of kids, not someone just shooting hoops by themselves, but, kids playing basketball in very close contact and other things like that. So I'm all for getting out and taking a walk or riding a bike or going for a jog. In fact, everyone should be doing that because no one can stand to be cooped up in their house all day. But you should only be doing that with your household contacts, or if you are doing it with someone else, you have to maintain that 6 feet distance from each other. So that's That's the key on that. Our trails do remain open. Our Montgomery County Trail System is open. Our parks are closed. And the parking lots for our parks, because we don't want people congregating there. But the trails, you can still go on the trail through the park. We just don't want people parking in the lots and having picnics and things like that, because we really need people to keep that social distance. And then for the second question about the antibody assays, yes. So those tests are being developed as I speak. In fact, there's a couple that are trying to get rapid FDA approval. And they test for different antibodies. One antibody is produced early in an infection, and then there's a second antibody that's produced later. And some of these tests test for both, some test for one, some test for the other. The biggest use of these kinds of tests, I believe, will be later on, when we can do exactly what you just said, which was we could go back and just test anybody and see if they have the disease. Because as I mentioned earlier, a lot of people are infected, but they don't really know it. They wouldn't tell you that they were sick. So we will have the ability to do that down the road. And that will help from a public health standpoint to understand how many people did this disease really infect, and how many people do need vaccination. And then over time, you could follow and see, you know, was that person reinfected down the road, that sort of thing. So those tests are in development, and they will be available probably fairly soon in some cases.
That's terrific. And I can tell you, the Powerline Trail in Horsham is full of people out getting exercise every day. It's actually great to see. And people are, you know, they're staying spread apart. I see people talking, but they're talking, you know, 10 feet apart from one another, which is great.
Yeah,
the 2-inch Parkway Trail is the same way. So people are getting out. I want to roll through. There's a couple questions on here. I don't think we necessarily have to take the time up, but maybe you could just answer for me here. Somebody said they got a call for jury duty tomorrow. They said, is the Montgomery County Courthouse really open? Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I've been trying to get to the bottom of that today. This is the third person now I've heard got a call for jury duty. And that office is actually run by two people who are the elected jury commissioners. And so I don't have the specific details of exactly how that office runs, because it's not, you know, it's under the authority of these two individuals who are separately elected. But it was definitely a mistake. The courthouse is shut down except for emergency hearings, and there are no jury trials being held. And we don't anticipate any jury trials being held now until probably late May or June. So if anybody did get a call or a summons in the mail or anything like that for any time in the next, you know, 6 to 8 weeks, they can just ignore it. If they call the number on there, they're going to get a message that says there's no jury trials right now. They don't have to come in.
Got it. All right. That's good info. We have a question here from Steve, who wants to know about hospital beds in Montgomery County and availability. I'll let you handle that in 1 second. One of the things I will share with the folks, the Secretary of Health does an update for us every day, and she did say that about 40% of the ICU beds in Pennsylvania are still available, as well as 75% of the ventilators. And so, you know, she was commenting that, as Dr. Kush mentioned earlier, we haven't felt the full brunt of this wave yet, and we're hoping that we won't. We still do have some supplies available. What's the status here in Montgomery County?
Well, that's a very important question, and one that we spend time on literally every single day. We have 9 hospitals here in Montgomery County, and we've been in very close and regular contact with all of them. And we are about to have a dashboard that we can look at every day that pretty much in real time will tell us how many hospital beds are available in each of our different hospitals in the county, so that if any one place starts to really look like they're approaching capacity, that we can make sure other hospitals know that and, you know, try to share the patient load if that becomes necessary. But right now, happily, it's not necessary. I mentioned earlier that most of our hospitals are only about half full, because they've canceled all elective procedures, and they're keeping those beds open. Some of our hospitals have created some additional intensive care unit beds in case they do get a lot of patients that need to be on a ventilator or have that very high level of care required. And, you know, my hope is if everybody stays home, and I'm sorry to sound like a broken record, but really this is the key, that by staying home, what we're doing is we're protecting our first responders, our paramedics, and our police. We're protecting our hospitals from the type of surge that you're seeing up in New York City, which is just heartbreaking. You're protecting the grocery store clerks and the pharmacists and all of the people that stock the shelves in those places and the supply chain to supply those places. And you're protecting your grandparents and maybe your parents or your neighbor that's fighting cancer or your neighbor that has a lot of serious underlying medical conditions. So even if you're healthy and young and think you're going to be fine, we still need you to stay home because you could be carrying this virus and you could infect one of those people and not even realize it. So that's why we keep pushing this message of staying at home. Everybody has to stay home. And if we do that, our hope is our hospitals are going to get through this okay.
Well, let's hope. That's hope springs eternal. We had a question about SEPTA and what steps are they taking. I know they've dramatically reduced their schedules. We also got a notification from them that they've added extra cleaning and disinfecting stations at stations and on vehicles in recent weeks. In addition, some employees who would normally operate buses and trains will now be repositioned at transportation centers and transit loops to further enhance these cleaning efforts. I know that they've been really doing a great job down there at SEPTA and, you know, trying to help manage this, getting obviously, you know, much needed and critical healthcare workers to and from their jobs every day, but at the same time balancing that with the social distancing. Anything to add there, Commissioner?
No, I think you pretty much summarized it. I've been told that the ridership, particularly on the regional rails, is down like 90%. So I think the regional rail system at this point is just on essential service, which is a very, very limited service. So certainly if anyone was going to ride the regional rails, make sure you check SEPTA's website before you do that.
Sure. All right, let's go to Tej. Oh, now I lost. Tej, are you there?
Hey, I'm here.
Okay,
thanks,
great.
Yep.
No problem at all.
Spending your evening with us. Hopefully we all stay vigilant with staying at home, but from a preparation standpoint, are there any plans to distribute and provide residents with masks and hand sanitizers?
Commissioner, any plans for that?
Well, yeah, no is the easy answer to that. There just are not enough masks. So let me tell you about a couple efforts that are going on. When it comes to the medical quality masks, whether it's those N95 masks that actually filter out the virus or just regular surgical masks that you would see in a hospital, every hospital has them, but nobody has lots of extra, so they're using them very carefully. The CDC actually has guidelines for extending the use of personal protective equipment in a pandemic, and all of our hospitals are following that. Additionally, we have to prioritize our paramedics and police to make sure that they have the proper equipment because they're going into people's homes. And if there's any question, we screen every 911 call now. And if the symptoms of the individual calling for help are consistent with the coronavirus, then we make sure that the paramedics go in with personal protective equipment on because we don't want them to get sick and not be able to work. So that's where the priorities are right now. That and some of our long-term care facilities is where all the PPE is going. We do have some amazing, wonderful people. Our community has been phenomenal. Huge numbers of people are sewing cloth masks. And we just put up a Facebook page called Making Masks for Motco. And anyone can join that group. And it's people who are making masks and it's people who need masks. So we've had a lot of people reach out because maybe they have to go to the hospital every day for chemotherapy treatments, and they would love to have even just a cloth mask on to help protect them. But the cloth masks are best for someone who's actually sick so that when they cough or sneeze, it keeps anyone else from being infected. In the perfect world, though, if we did have enough masks, it would be helpful if everybody was wearing a mask when they were out in the public and interacting with other people. But unfortunately, right now, we just don't have that many masks. So there are a number of our distilleries that are starting to make hand sanitizer, Boardroom Spirits in Lansdale, which should be pretty close to most of your constituents, Representative Stevens, is offering small bottles for free. And I think if you buy anything from the distillery, the actual liquor, then you get some hand sanitizer for free. And in Norristown, Five Saints Distillery is working with Aaron's Crazy Thinking Putty, and they're making big vats of hand sanitizer that they're selling to like hospitals and to police departments and things like that. So it's been really wonderful to see how our community has stood up and is working to make the things that we all need right now.
It really is. The ingenuity and selflessness of this community is terrific. I know that I've spent a fair number of hours over the last several days dealing with this issue in particular. On Thursday and Friday, I was getting calls from hospital workers, and then spoke with the Department of Health, who had said they had just sent out some a shipment on the 25th to a couple of local hospitals down here. And then over the weekend, it was EMS workers, and was communicating with Pima over the weekend. And your staff, Dr. Wang and everybody over there have been terrific and very responsive in helping us work through that for our first responders. And then in between all that, I've had several manufacturers. I mean, one just today who has a terrific manufacturing plant. He was making the shoulder pads that go in suits. And I guess some of those same pads can be used in bikini tops and other things. And he's repurposed his manufacturing facility so that now he can make these masks. So he's joining the efforts to try to help here. It's really really amazing what people are coming up with and the way people are stepping up from all walks of life to help. I love that Masks for Monco initiative. That's terrific. And for folks who want to support small businesses, who want to support small businesses, get over that distillery and get your hand sanitizer. We have just a few minutes left, so I do want to run through here real quick. I know a lot of folks have questions about unemployment compensation, and we've made a lot of changes to expand eligibility, and that's a good thing. The downside is what that means is so many people are applying. The state system, I know, was down today. Just to give folks a sense of the numbers, in February, total, there were about 300,000 Pennsylvanians on unemployment compensation. Just in about the last 10 days, the state has experienced over 700,000 new applicants for unemployment compensation. The LA Times ran a story today or yesterday about how we are sadly leading the nation in this regard. And so the system is just overwhelmed. I want to let everybody know that we are here to help. That's one of the things that my office does and does very well. If you're having trouble getting through, reach out to our office. We will make sure that your claims are getting filed. We'll help address the issues with your PIN and everything else like that. I know a lot of folks have questions about that. And it's a hard time for everybody. We're going to need to do everything we can here. Let me get to another call here. Let's get to Greg, who has a question about saline. You have a question about saline, Greg?
Yes, because I've been using the saline nasal spray to flush out my sinuses, because on the labels, on the squeeze bottles and the canisters, is it effective in cleaning your nasals of flu, cold areas in regards to that? Is it effective if I flush out my sinuses with saline spray?
Doctor, I think that one's out.
Well,
or at least it's not up mine.
Yeah, it certainly won't hurt. I can't tell you that it's definitely effective, but you certainly won't do any harm by that. And, right now there's a lot of people are suffering with allergies, and often the saline can definitely help with that. So if you're doing it and you're feeling good, no reason to stop. But you're much better off making sure you stay at home, and if you are out, stay 6 feet away from people that aren't your household contacts, and that's going to be more effective for sure than the saline. But no reason to stop the saline.
Got it. Let's go to Therese. She's got a question about testing for healthcare workers. Go ahead, Therese.
Yes. I work in a retail pharmacy in a department store, not in a freestanding pharmacy. So we come in contact with very many people, not all sick, not all healthy. But I was wondering when testing might be open to healthcare workers that are not exhibiting any symptoms, but may have been in contact with people that have had the virus unknowingly.
Well, if okay. Yeah, I was going to say, if you know you've had direct contact, you're welcome to be tested right now at our testing site in Temple Ambler. Or if you're highly suspicious that you may have come into contact, then, you know, we would be happy to test you. Right now, it is taking anywhere from 3 to 5 days, sometimes 6, to get those test results back. And so we are really, and we only have a very limited number of tests. We're only able to send 250 tests each day to the lab. We could easily test way more than that, but we don't have the test kits, and the lab will only take 250 a day. So we have had, in this time of scarce resources, had to prioritize the people who are most necessary to figure out if they actually have the coronavirus or something else. As a general recommendation, if you are at baseline, a pretty healthy person, and you're feeling okay, and you may have been exposed, but you're not having any symptoms at all, then we wouldn't recommend that you get tested just to see if you've been exposed, because the test isn't going to really tell you anything unless you actually have the disease, and you're usually symptomatic within about 2 days of getting it. So in the perfect world, if we had an infinite number of tests, we would be testing everybody, and we would use that to isolate people who did have virus in their systems that maybe weren't symptomatic yet, and we could be much more aggressive in letting some people go back to work or school and then putting other people in isolation or quarantine who needed to be. But we're just not there yet with the availability of tests. The good news is that the FDA approved last Friday a test that is what's called a point-of-care test. It's similar to when you go in and get a rapid strep test, maybe for your kids or for you, where in 15, 20 minutes sitting in the doctor's office, you get an answer. That test was approved on Friday, and as soon as that becomes widely available, we should be in a much better position to do exactly what you're talking about, which is broad-based, population-based testing, and then we can really figure out who's positive, who's not, who needs to be in isolation, who doesn't, and that would be part of the steps that need to happen to get us comfortable with relaxing some of these stay-at-home restrictions.
All right. Following up on that, as it relates to testing, and Joe had a question about a disconnect between testing and private labs. Joe, are you there?
Yes, Representative Stevens. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Thank you very much for your diligent work on that first responder issue earlier in the week. Dr. Akush, thank you very much for what you're doing. You're dealt a difficult situation. Last week, you had said that there was a disconnect in testing results being reported and how you're tracking things. Has that been resolved, number one? Number two, was that a regional issue, or is that something that was nationwide where we're actually not seeing the true results?
I'm not sure what you were referring to. I wonder, were you referring to the fact that the state reports out at one time of day and the county we report out at another, so our numbers don't sync up? Is that what you were?
That could be part of it, where the numbers weren't syncing, but also that you weren't receiving information from the private labs. Have they been required to report now to you?
No, we're getting it. I think now I know what you were probably referring to. So in the early days, which was just 3 weeks ago, we sent, the only place where we could send our tests was to the Pennsylvania Department of Health lab. And they were getting us results back in 24 to 48 hours. But they could only run about 100 tests a day. So obviously that was just not going to fly. So then the Pennsylvania Department of Health worked with LabCorp and Quest to enable them to do much more testing, and they were approved to do more testing. And maybe what you're referring to is the fact that we have to actually then send those tests out to, I think, California in most cases, although I think some tests are going to Virginia. So the test gets FedExed or overnight shipped out there, and then they have to run the test, and then they have to get the results back. So that process has been taking 3 to 5 days.
That's, you know, you touched on something that we have a couple other questions about too, and I just wanted to clarify that for folks. I know, so the state releases their information. We usually get an email shortly before noon each day, and that's current as of midnight the night before. And then I know in an effort to make sure you're giving the most current information available, you're usually walking to the podium right around 3 with the most current numbers and data and statistics. Is that right each day?
Yeah, that's correct. So we typically cut off our numbers. Our new cases are at either noon or 1, usually noon, and then we report at 3 o'clock. So we are a little out of sync with the state.
But more current than the state. So that's I see
usually
the benefit
more current.
To that.
Yeah.
I've gotten caught with that. I know a couple of people have questions about it, and I've gotten caught a couple of times where I've looked at the numbers and wondered what was going on there. But let's get we have time for one more call here real quick. We'll get to John, who has a question about when's this going to end? Right, John? That's the question, something along those lines. What do you got there?
Well, if anyone could figure that out, that would be great. I'd love to know the answer. So we do actually have some information. This has now been going on for long enough, and we've got enough information from testing and enough information from watching what's happened in other countries that we have been able to do some what's called modeling to try to figure out what is the path that we're on here. And most of the modeling is suggesting that Pennsylvania will see our peak incidence in about 2 weeks. So the modeling is suggesting that over the next 2.5 weeks, we should see a steadily rising number of cases. And then hopefully we'll be on the other side of it and start to come down. Now, all of that is based on people staying home really for the next month, as depressing as that is, the next 4 weeks at a minimum. Because even once the cases are on the downturn, you have to remember that when someone's been exposed, it can take up to 14 days for them to start to have symptoms. And we have seen that here in the county. We have seen people who got sick on day 13 and day 14 and tested positive. So even once the numbers start to come down to much lower levels, we still need to let another 2 weeks go by after that before people are going to be comfortable that we're really in the clear here. So unfortunately, this staying at home and the social distancing is going to be with us for probably a minimum of 4 weeks and more likely 6. I think that's why you heard Governor Wolf today announce that they were not I believe the term he used was that the schools are going to be closed indefinitely rather than try to put a date on it. He just acknowledged that it's going to be a while.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Right. Yeah, he typically tries to work in 2 week increments, but that, you know, understandably so, that decision today to just say, look, instead of doing this 2 weeks at a time, let's just say until further notice. So, look,
right.
I think we are just about out of time here. Commissioner Arcush, I can't thank you enough for making yourself available. I know you've got a county of almost 800,000 people that you're looking after, and to take time tonight to join us is most appreciated. I just can't thank you for making yourself available. And I think the constituents in my district really appreciate all that you're doing to keep us safe and to keep this county moving, and for making yourself available for questions tonight. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I always appreciate the opportunity to talk with the folks here in Montgomery County, and I really appreciate the opportunity to answer all these questions because I know people have so many questions. And just one more time, I want to give our county website, which is montcopa.org/COVID, COVID-19. And that's our county data hub, and you'll find lots of the information that we talked about tonight there, as well as all kinds of resources for businesses, for schools, for parents, access to how to get some of the workforce information that Representative Stevens talked about earlier. So check that out if you haven't seen it yet.
That's terrific information. I want to thank everyone who's joined us on the call tonight and asked all these great questions. If you have a question but did not get a chance to ask it, or if you're having any problems at all with state government, whether it's unemployment compensation or PennDOT registration, driver's license issues, Department of Revenue, or whatever it may be, know that we are open remotely. So you'll have to contact us either on the web at reptoddstevens.com. You can call my office, 215-368-5165, and just leave a voicemail. We are checking the voicemails repeatedly throughout the day, pulling them down and returning phone calls and making sure we're getting back to people. And then, of course, you can always email me directly. You can go to reptoddstevens.com/contact and send me an email with whatever it is you need help with, and we'll be happy to help. And I get plenty of questions about federal issues and state issues, and I've got great partners at the county level, as you've heard here tonight, with Dr. and Commissioner Valerie Arcush, as well as our federal members of Congress, Madeline Dean and Brian Fitzpatrick, are great partners to work with, as are Senators Toomey and Casey. So we've got a great team working on all levels of government and down to the local level as well. So please get in touch with us. We're happy to help anyway. Everybody, please stay home, stay calm, and stay safe. Thanks, everybody. Have a great evening.